From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Joe Biden's plan to tackle the coronavirus crisis in the U.S. appears refreshingly straightforward, and relative to the lack of a plan under Donald Trump, seems to have lulled Americans into a false sense of security that the pandemic will soon end. But there is no plan to eliminate the virus, only to spread out infections and deaths over a long enough time to buy hospitals the breathing room they need and to allow vaccinations to continue. In other nations, especially in Asia and Africa, where experience with deadly infectious diseases has informed their approach, COVID-19 elimination is well underway. We turn today to Ireland, where a group of scientists and academics has launched an ambitious effort to outline a clear path forward, a COVID zero plan that includes ideas like one lockdown to end them all. My guest is Julian Marcil. He is an associate professor in the School of Geography at University College Dublin, Ireland, and the author of a number of books, including The Political Economy and Media Coverage of the European Economic Crisis, The Case for Ireland, Case of Ireland, Europe's Treasure, Ireland, Deepening Neoliberalism, Austerity and Crisis. He's involved in the newly launched COVID zero effort. Welcome to the program, Julian.
Thank you.
So first, how bad is the situation in Ireland? Obviously, the numbers are much, much smaller than the US. Population is way smaller. But relative to population, how serious is the situation in Ireland?
Well, it's very serious. In January, we were the one country that was the worst per capita in terms of cases, daily cases. And now we've gone down since then to a level that's very high still, but it's in the right direction. Let's say it's not low enough to open up the schools again, but they implemented a new lockdown. And then the cases are going down. But the question is to know how fast it will go down.
So essentially, the approach is lockdown that's sort of imperfect. Cases fall. The society opens up again. Cases rise. Another lockdown. It sounds familiar. Here in the United States, we've essentially been doing that on a state-by-state level and sometimes a county-by-county or even city-by-city level. And all we're seeing is spreading out the infections and deaths and no actual plan to stop the virus. Meanwhile, it's mutating. So that's obviously a really serious concern, right? Because a vaccine may not be as effective against a mutated virus.
Yeah, the approach for the last year, we refer to it as a yo-yo lockdown. So you have a lockdown, cases go down, then the government goes with the pressure from the business lobby to open up restaurants and shops, and then it goes back up immediately because the government doesn't put measures in place to keep it down, which is important, which is what my group is working on, among other things. And then we go back up in the cases, and then it becomes unbearable for the government to see that and feel public pressure. So they have a new lockdown, and that's how it's been really. So in early December, we had a situation that was not perfect, but the cases were going down really. And we were slowly getting there to have a very low level of cases. And then they had the brilliant idea of opening the shops for Christmas. Because money,
because profits, business.
Yeah, there's that. That's definitely there, but I think there's also an inability on the part of government or unwillingness to carry out a big national program, because to beat COVID, it's not something you do lightly. You have to mobilize national resources. And in Europe, nearly nobody has done that. And so they don't want to be the first one to try to risk something and get it wrong or go in the wrong direction or something. So they're just waiting, hoping that the vaccines will cover people. So by opening up at Christmas, then the new variant from the UK and South Africa and Brazil came in. It's not why we had most of the spike, but it added to the situation. And so we got, like I said, early January or so, we were the world champions in the highest number of cases. So now they're going to put a lockdown again. And the fear is that when the cases will be down to, in Ireland, it'll be about 200 or 100 cases per day. That level, the politicians will want to open up again. And that'll be a battle to be fought in a month or so.
Meanwhile, vaccinations are only able to go fast, you know, to a certain level, because they're, you know, even though the distribution is hampered, it's also an issue of production. The vaccine manufacturers are not sharing their patents. Governments aren't requiring them to give up their patents. And so we don't have, you know, all the forces of the pharmaceutical industry is marshaled to be able to mass manufacture generic versions of the vaccine. So we're sort of stuck waiting on Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna. And now we know that the Russian vaccine Sputnik, just this week, The Lancet published a phase three peer-reviewed study showing that the Russian vaccine is indeed almost as efficient as Moderna's and Pfizer's, which is certainly good news. But you can't, it seems, vaccinate our way out of this crisis. So tell me about the independent scientific advocacy group, ISAG, which you are a part of, that has launched in Ireland now. What is this group and what is your goal?
Yeah, the group is, it was formed in July. So quite a few months ago, it was an early group by the standards of such groups in the world. There are other groups like that. And the goal is to go for zero COVID. Zero COVID doesn't mean like a perfect, you know, elimination necessarily. That's like the goal. But really, by now in Ireland, we say if we could have a level that's very low and allow people to function normally with masks and social distancing, that would be great until the vaccines are rolled out. But the real definition is for 14 days in a row, you would have no community cases. So all the cases that would pop up in the country, you would actually know their origin. You can nip them in the bud, as opposed to cases which you just don't know where they're from. So that'd be the goal. We go on the media to inform people, try to convince government to be more aggressive in their approach. We talk to all political parties, to business groups, and we've just launched a national campaign, which is more of a popular thing, to reach a lot of ordinary people, right, who want to do something because everybody's really tired of it. So even though people agree with us in large part, there's not much you can do so far because you can't protest in the streets or do something else. But the national polls came out last week and it was so surprising even to us. The level of popular support is ridiculous. It's like at 90%, 91% of people want mandatory hotel quarantine for travelers who come to Ireland, which we knew it was a trend, but we never thought it would be 91%. And all the measures we propose, it's 75%+. So it's about mobilizing that support and trying to channel it through action.
So let's take a look at some of the approaches. So there's basically a plan to bring the virus cases down to as close to zero as possible. Of course, there's the issue of distributing vaccines. And then you have one lockdown to end them all. Tell me about this idea, because yes, people are extremely tired of endless lockdowns. And in, you know, here in the United States, I don't know how much you've been following it, but with the lack of leadership, you basically have people creating their own rules, following whatever idea and rule they think is worthwhile, because there just has not been enough leadership for the vast majority of the time that we've had the pandemic. You know, some people have been in almost completely, you know, hermetically sealed isolation since last March, while others have just been going about their lives saying, I'm not going to let fear rule over me. And then that doesn't even include all of the conspiracy thinking. So one lockdown to end them all means what exactly?
Yeah, well, the way we explain it is very simple. In the world right now, there's two types of countries. The ones that have beaten COVID and the ones that are still fighting COVID are in a mess.
And the ones
The
that have
one with
beaten COVID, give it, throw out a few number names.
There's maybe in Asia Pacific region, so Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, Vietnam, China, Taiwan, Korea. They've beaten COVID and they've all done the same thing. So it's very, very easy to copy what they've done and adapt it to local needs and local features. So the strategy to beat COVID, you don't have to think very far to know what it is. So we say, when you have a lot of cases, like in the US or Ireland or Europe at the moment, you need some kind of lockdown to make sure people don't interact too much together. And yet that brings the cases down. Maybe it takes a few weeks, maybe it takes 2 months, 3 months. It depends how you do it, where you are and your level of cases. So that's one lockdown to end them all. It means after that, once the cases are really low, and we're talking really low, a few cases a day that you cannot explain where they're from, the community cases, as we call them in Ireland, then you have to secure your borders, manage your borders, because there's no point having a lockdown and allowing all those travelers to come back and reinfect the country, reseed the country. So you have to manage that through a quarantine, like they do in Australia or anywhere else that have been successful. So that's the second part, manage your borders. And the third part is you need a good public health infrastructure. So contacting people who have COVID or who are close contacts, tracing that and isolating them. So you kind of chase the remaining cases.
So having a national health program helps, which of course here in the United States, we don't.
Yeah, although you see in Australia, they've been very successful and they've relied a lot on the private sector. So it wouldn't be, let's say, my ideal approach. But yeah, you have to use what you have. At this stage, that's what you need to do. And it needs to be coordinated very well. So that's all you need, really. And then you need discipline to do it. And the problem, you were saying people do their own thing and they don't believe anything. And that's exactly what you would expect when there's no good leadership and no good plan. So in Ireland, people are quite compliant. People, if you look at the opinion polls, people agree with the restrictions and they want even more. So that's never been a problem. There's some groups that...
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry, but I'm just really, really bursting with envy right now as an American, listening to you speak about people complying with public health orders because they actually want, you know, to have collective public health. I mean, we just don't have that in the US.
Yeah, it's a different. I mean, Ireland is not the best in Europe. There's other countries where, let's say in Scandinavia, in Finland, the public health experts give guidelines and they're the ones who arrange the solution. So, but Ireland people have respected that, but now they're really getting tired of it because the government says, okay, lockdown, but then there's no exit strategy. There's no plan for, you know, like I said, managing borders really, or investing in public health, which is very poor in Ireland compared to other countries in Europe. So people kind of lose hope, or they don't see the sacrifices why they would make them if there's no reward at the end. And it's the same thing for the business sector. The businesses, you see them on TV. We've had everything. Every show in Ireland on TV, there's always a pub owner or a hairdresser or a restaurant owner who's there complaining that the restrictions are too harsh, we should open up the economy. But when you talk to them in private, most of them agree with what we say, more or less. But they say, look, if there's no plan on the part of government to actually do that, why would I close my restaurant for 3 months? Because I'll lose everything. You know, at the end of it, they'll just reopen and then it'll get out of hand again. So that's the problem. There's no good strategy. The government now, in the last 2 weeks, actually, it's been a big, big shift. So 3 weeks ago, my group was seen at, people knew us, but people supported us in the population, but the
and
government
this is
wouldn't.
ISAG group, Independent Scientific Advocacy Group.
Yeah, the government wouldn't really take us that seriously. But the last 2 weeks, they've had to, the media would ask them, what do you think of ISAG's group, the group recommendation? What do you think of zero COVID? Why don't you want to go to zero COVID? And this is a big, big sea change for us. So the last 2 weeks have been quite busy watching that unfold, how the government now is is responding to us.
So you mentioned, you know, the hairdressers and restaurant owners obviously needing the economy to remain open in order to survive. This is a real concern, especially here in the US where, you know, we've been in a semi-lockdown. Depending upon where you live and where your business is, you might have already gone out of business or you're just hanging on by a thread. It's not clear when, you know, how effective the loans are. Shouldn't a COVID zero plan include financial support, like very clear financial support that involves paying people to stay home and having just the absolute bare minimum of those who need to work, like those who are literally, you know, helping to feed us?
Yeah, I should have mentioned it. You cannot have a lockdown and not have the financial support, because that's just telling people stay home and starve. So in Ireland and in Europe in general, there's been good support by relative standards. You could have better, but it's been okay. And yeah, if you don't have that, there's no way you can ask people to stay home for 2 months. So it's key. And yeah, the countries like Denmark did it really well at the beginning. Ireland, like I said, was okay. But yeah, if you don't have that, it's really hard to ask people. People won't stay home. They'll keep going to their work.
So you have had success in getting traction in Ireland for this idea. Are there any other European efforts? Because of all the success stories that you've mentioned so far, they've mostly been in the Asian Pacific region. Europe is struggling like the US. If Ireland can point a way forward, are there other European states that are at least exploring the idea of COVID zero?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few small groups, but now there's a group in Germany that's, let's say, quite well organized. And we're actually having a webinar with them tomorrow, presenting, they call it No COVID there. Their plans are essentially the same as ours. So yeah, there is a movement. I think in Europe, we're one of the quite active ones from what I hear from people who are globally connected on those matters. But there's one in the UK, the Independent Sage, which is very, very strong in the UK as well. But because Ireland is a small country, we have access to the mainstream media, like much more, let's say, than the group in the UK, who are much more established, let's say, number of people that they have and resources. But because it's a small country here, you can have access to the politicians really easily and the media as well. So maybe in terms of impact, we've been quite successful for that. But yeah, it's Europe is a bit of an anomaly or mystery on this one. You would have expected that the richest continent in the world with the best welfare systems would have reacted in a nicer way, in a better way to COVID, but it's really not a good reaction. It was early on with the lockdowns, really reduced the cases in the summer. Then they just opened up, and then you've seen Italy, Spain, complete disasters, and France as well. So I compare it a bit to the economic crisis from 10 years ago, where Europe was quite harsh with austerity, and now they're kind of realizing somewhat that it was a mistake. But this one, I don't know if it'll be the same thing, but so far Europe has really been not a model to follow. It might be better than the US in some respects, but it's really the Asia Pacific countries that have shown the way.
And yet there has been so little media dissection of how China beat the virus, how Thailand and New Zealand and Australia beat the virus. I looked at this one USA Today piece from last year that looked at how China, you know, by the middle of last year had already very successfully brought down cases to just handfuls of numbers in some parts of the country. And this one article looking at that said that China took far more radical virus dampening actions that many people outside the country might find culturally, logistically, and emotionally Unpalatable. I mean, it's just amazing. There's this very serious anti-China prejudice here, at least in the US mainstream media. And of course, China deserves criticism when its leadership engages in human rights abuses, but that doesn't certainly mean that everything the country does and that the country's leaders do is wrong. And there's been this almost no effort to say, well, how did these other countries eliminate the virus and how can we follow that model? And it really does seem to be this massive media blind spot and very serious bias.
Yeah, it's a very good point, and it's just outrageous. It's the same thing in Europe, exactly the same that happened. So until, I would say, without exaggeration, until 2 weeks ago, you could count on one hand the articles you had about Taiwan, New Zealand, Australia, in terms of what you said, how they successfully beat the virus. There was a complete lack of coverage on this. It was just really embarrassing because people kind of knew that it was really good, let's say New Zealand or Australia. And just to give you a kind of funny example, we've talked more about hotel quarantine for travel, which is essential to beat COVID, in the Irish media and European media, the same thing, because of Djokovic at the Australian Open in tennis, who refused to do this and that with the quarantine there. So people started talking about it in the media, but it was about him, right? And now, last 2 weeks, like I said, really the media started covering that. They don't have a choice anymore. They've really shifted. But before that, it's simply outrageous. Like, he had no coverage whatsoever of New Zealand, which was at zero COVID, perfect example, democratic country, free market country. You couldn't dismiss it on any grounds, but they didn't cover it at all. If they did, sometimes it was for things like that'd be, let's say, a small outbreak somewhere in New Zealand or Australia. And then the media would focus on that, saying, oh, you see, even a zero COVID strategy, you have lockdowns and outbreaks, even though the outbreak was like four cases and the lockdown was 3 days.
Right, and
But
then you
yeah,
can
it's
sort of
been.
tailor your lockdowns to where the outbreaks are. You can target them locally without having to disrupt and lock the entire region or country down, right? When you have a methodical reopening, then you tackle each small outbreak on a local level as it happens. That's not a reason to not pursue zero, eliminate zero COVID.
But the way to beat COVID, it's a very geographical approach. You can't deal with the whole country at once. It's not possible. So some places in the country will always be advantaged for whatever reason. Maybe they're far from big cities or something, and they'll reach zero COVID before others. Other regions will be, or areas or cities will be facing a more difficult situation. Let's say a big city like New York or LA, they'll probably be last to reach zero because there's a lot of travel and a lot of people in a small area. So you have to deal with them, like you said, by zones. So when one zone becomes zero, you protect it. You make sure that people don't fly out and in and bring new cases. And the other cities, like they did in Melbourne in Australia, they really isolated Melbourne, and for a long number of weeks, and then people stayed there and you couldn't go, and that's the only way you can do that. So yeah, it's localized management, and I would say the principles of outbreak management are quite simple. The thing that's really tough is to implement them locally, taking account of whatever characteristics the place has, and you have a dedicated police forces and public health doctors who know how to handle this and give a good message to the population so people understand why things are being done. And that's the challenge more than the general
Right. And
principles.
here in the United States, involving police and any sort of enforcement always comes with its own risks. As we know, our police are well armed, tend to engage, tend to exacerbate problems rather than solve them, and of course, are deeply riddled with racial bias. So we have our own unique set of problems. I want to go back to what I was saying about anti-China and anti sort of Asia bias in the press. There's also massive bias against Africa. African nations have actually actually that, you know, there was this fear that they would, that the continent would be massively underwater with COVID, given past experiences and outbreaks of diseases like Ebola. National Geographic took a look at more than 50 countries and found that while the continent has pretty, you know, significant, something like 17% of the world's population, it's only 3 or 4% of the world's COVID cases. And so they've had a harsh lockdown, they've had mask wearing, they've, you know, done the right things, but unfortunately are less likely to have equal access to vaccines, which is a whole nother conversation about global vaccine equity. You know, unfortunately, with the overemphasis on vaccines here in the US and even in Europe, it seems as though we're worse off than many African nations in terms of dealing with COVID.
Yeah, the vaccine is really unfortunate because now the Western countries are fighting for vaccines and they're competing, you know, is Ireland better than Holland or France at rolling out the vaccine? And it's a bit irrelevant in a way because it's like, you know, fighting for a big cake when the rest of the world is not having even crumbs.
Julian, we're out of time. Give out a website for the ISAG group that you're part of, the Independent Scientific Advocacy Group in Ireland.
ISAGCOVID19.org. That's the website, and it's being relaunched now, so it's even better than before.
So we'll post a link to that from our website. Julian, thanks so much for joining us, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
My guest has been Julian Marcille, Associate Professor in the School of Geography at University College Dublin in Ireland. And we've been talking about a newly launched COVID zero effort there that offers a model to the United States and the rest of the world. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.